This is Changing the Rules, a podcast about designing the life you want to live. Hosted by Casey Dempster and Ray Lowe, the luckiest guy in the world.
Good morning, everybody. This is Casey Dempster, and I'm your host for Changing the Rules, and I'm with here with my co-host, Ray Lowe. And our podcast is about change and transition. And we know that a lot of people have a hard time with change, whether it's of their own making or whether it's being forced upon them. They're afraid of it, and they resist it. And so we believe that if you have a plan, that can make the change easier for you. So if you are finding yourself in a place where you're thinking about retirement, or whether you're changing jobs at your choice or by someone else's choice, or if you just want to jumpstart your life because you're not real happy where you are right now, we think you need to have a plan. And we think that you need actually two plans. One is a game plan for what might be happening right now or what you think might be approaching. But the other thing is what we call the playbook, which, as I said before, you know, it's odd to hear a football reference from me, who's not a huge sports fan. But all teams have a game plan for the game that they're playing, but they also have a playbook so that if the opposing team comes up with a surprise for them, they can go back to the playbook and find something to counterbalance that so that they can still win and be successful. And that's what we're proposing for our listeners. And that's what we're hoping to bring to you through our podcast is a game plan and a playbook. So if you're being told how to act and it doesn't feel right to you, we think that you should change the rules. Just because things have always been done a certain way doesn't mean you have to keep doing them that way. So change the rules, take control of your life, and move forward.
So all this time, and now you tell me I need a plan?
You need a game plan and
all right.
A playbook.
So let's talk about breaking rules and changing rules for a minute, because
okay.
We had a TV show for a long time called Breaking the Rules, mm-hmm. and we decided that wasn't good enough, okay, because sometimes you just have to change the rules. And we're all saddled with rules that we've kind of accumulated over our lifetime. And it started with our parents,
mm-hmm.
and I think they did the rules because they wanted to keep us under control. And then we had teachers who gave us rules, and I know that's why they wanted to keep us under control.
Okay.
And then you have the church, and then you have all the jobs and everything else. And this is okay until you get to the point where you find that those rules are stifling you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the time that you need to sit down and you need to figure out what your rules are.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we all need rules, but they need to be our rules, not somebody else's rules.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
All right. So I have to tell a story.
Yes.
Okay. So today we're going to talk about airplanes.
Airplanes.
Now, every time I travel, I usually wind up observing some things going on that turn into be great stories, okay? And Sandy is my wife of now 55 years, we're official.
Holy
okay.
mackerel.
Okay, so we were in Africa, and we were excited because we're going on safari. And we're also a little apprehensive. So we're walking down the concourse in Johannesburg Airport, and our purpose is to get to a gate where we meet our fellow travelers and our guide who's going to take us on this wonderful excursion that's going to enhance our life. And as we're walking down the concourse, Sandy looks out the window, and she says, I hope that's not our airplane. And I kind of looked out there, and there's this old airplane sitting on the tarmac over here. And I said, you know, I don't think so. And she said, I hope that's not our airplane. That thing needs to be retired. Okay. Well, we walked on the tarmac. We finally meet our group, and it's a great group. And we have our guide. And of course, the guide says, let me introduce you to your airplane. And she points to this thing. Okay. And it happened to be a DC-3 for all of you who are past flyers. And she said, let me tell you about the magnificent history of your aircraft. And the first thing she said is it was commissioned in 1941. Now, that's the year before I was born.
Dun, dun, dun.
Okay, so I get this serious elbow now, you know, and the the whisper in my ear is, we're going to die on this trip. And we went on, and she was talking about how this plane flew all these missions in World War II, and, you know, how it was really a workhorse, and it really did great things. And then we look up, and we see our two pilots on this plane, and they're standing at the front of the plane, and they're arguing. Now, this does not bode well for a good trip here, right?
Right.
Sandy's not quite near panic, but I can tell she's not happy at this point. And to make a long story short, though, we found out later that these pilots were not arguing, really. They were fighting over who gets to fly the plane. So it seems that this old workhorse is actually a fun airplane to fly. And we found that once we got in the air, because there were no automatic controls. They had to adjust if people leaned forward and all of these things. And
you mean if one person leaned forward, the plane would go down?
Well, it would go down, but it would dip a little bit. And certainly if you walk from the back of the plane to the front of the plane.
Okay.
You know, but anyway, to make a long story short, this aircraft was absolutely perfect for mm-hmm. this trip. Mm-hmm. Because, first of all, we could fly really low, and you could see the game down below. I mean, you know, and when you think about it, that's the purpose of our trip. This
exactly.
is what we wanted.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing is that it was able to get into tight spots. So we went into some of these small camps. They had small runways, in some cases no runway, and the aircraft just came in and it did its thing. So we were able to cover an awful lot of ground, a lot faster than we otherwise could, and it was relatively comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And it was such that the passengers all got to talk to each other, and it was an absolutely great time.
Right.
So I usually, dismiss these things while I'm traveling, but then on the way home or when I get home, I start to think about what's the significance of this story. And I started thinking about, first of all, Sandy said this plane ought to be retired. Well, what's the word retire mean? Okay, it means to take out of use,
mm-hmm.
right? That's the accounting term for it anyway.
Right.
So, you know, when we also think about ourselves and we think about retirement, you know, do we really want to be taken out of use?
No.
I don't think so.
Not unless I take myself out of use.
Okay. And then I started thinking, you know, somebody took an awful lot of time to think out the value of this aircraft.
Mm-hmm.
So here was a plane that isn't going to compete flying coast to coast anymore. It doesn't have the range, doesn't have the speed. The big jets are going to bury it, right?
Right.
All the time. And yet, when you think about it, here was this small run, okay, where, you know, fuel wasn't a problem. It could get into tight spaces. It was absolutely the perfect
And didn't you also tell me that it could fly on one engine?
It could fly on one engine. So,
and land on?
No engines.
Right.
Okay, so, you know, the safety factor was actually a whole lot better than we perceived. Okay, and we're going to come back and talk about perception later, because that's the name of the game. But somebody was able to salvage this airplane. Mm-hmm. Retirement wasn't in the picture at this time.
Right.
And it was by thinking about what the strengths are of this plane and how to capture it and make it useful.
Mm-hmm.
And we have two guests that are going to comment on this stuff later. So Bob and Sarah, start thinking of your answers. Okay, got a little time
but,
here.
But, you know, before you, I was just going to say that, as luck would have it, yesterday I was reading an article about Greenland, which is in the news, but this wasn't about that news. It was about the glacier. And how the scientists have discovered something from underneath that is more fear-inducing than we already thought about climate change. And but a paragraph in here, it just took me back. It said, a remodeled World War II DC-3 plane, now called Basler BT-57, takes a group of OMG researchers, and that doesn't mean oh my god. it means oceans melting Greenland. You know, around the coast of Greenland, and from the air they are able to launch special probes. So they have done this again. They found a use for these DC-3s that are perfect.
Well, and here's the point to all of this. Okay, just because you reach a certain age doesn't mean you should be taken out of the world.
You can still be the best there is.
Yeah, well, you can certainly be good. And this plane, for what it was doing, is probably the best there is.
Mm-hmm.
So all of us, as we age, I think we want to compare ourselves to this airplane. Just because we get to that age doesn't mean we can't be the best there is. And what we need to do that, though, is we need to think of three things.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to open this for discussion a little bit. It's a question of passion. Now, I don't know that an airplane has passion, but the people who designed this certainly do.
Right.
And then experience or what it's good at, the excellent factors here, because they need to be incorporated in there. And then the market, the mm-hmm. perceived value mm-hmm. of the plane, where you put it makes a difference.
Mm-hmm.
So taking this airplane, putting it somewhere in the center of the United States probably wouldn't have the value
right.
and the effectiveness that it had here.
Right.
So just going back again one more time, just because you reach a certain age doesn't mean you can't be the best there is.
Right.
All right.
And I have another little thing to add to that.
We knew that.
It's never too late to be what you might have been. And that's a quote from George Eliot, the writer.
Okay.
So before we go on, I want to take a quick break, and we'll be right back, and we'll introduce our guests and get in some really meaty stuff.
You're listening to Changing the Rules with Casey Dempster and Ray Lowe, the luckiest guy in the world. We will be right back with more exciting information.
Welcome back, everybody. As Diane said, we would be right back, and here we are. So,
okay.
Ray, why don't you introduce our guests?
Okay. So we're talking to two wonderful people today, Bob Gellner, and I'll give you Bob's background in a minute, and Sarah Brown. Now, I want to start with Bob, even though we usually do ladies first, Sarah. You know, you can look at it so we're holding the best for last, okay? Bob can beat you up over that. But Bob and I had an acquaintanceship 25 years ago, and it was built around our businesses, and we were doing some college planning at that time, and both of us built our businesses on that. And at this point in time, Bob and I are pretty much the same age, although he's younger than I am. Okay. So he's not the old wise man. He's the young upstart.
Almost wise man.
Yeah, good. And when we talked on the phone not too long ago, I think his comment to me is, hey, we're still here. We're having some fun and we're doing some good. Is that pretty close?
That's right. Every okay. day.
Okay. So tell us about what you do. Tell us about the name of your firm.
The name of the firm is Common Interests, and it started in 1994. At which time I had risen to the big office in the corner of the corporate world,
ooh.
And I hated it. So I said, I need to get out of this. 50 years old, two kids in college. I also said, Bob, you got one shot and you can't blow it.
Right.
So it turned out in thinking and in introspection that I can only work for me.
Okay.
I don't do well with a boss.
That's a good lesson to learn, and
yes.
the younger the better.
So that meant that I had to create my own firm, and I spent 30 years at that point doing what I was doing, so I knew how to do that. So I said, I'm just going to do it for me
mm-hmm.
and do it my way and play by my rules.
Mm-hmm.
So I founded Common Interest, and the name was evidence of the disdain that I had for the sales practices at that point mm-hmm. being used by the people I had trained. So when in that venue, somebody won always and somebody lost,
mm-hmm.
Our common interest means that when we sit together, the interests of all at the table are aligned. My mm-hmm. job is to do for them what they need done for them.
Mm-hmm.
And until we get to the end of that path, we'll just keep working together. And after that, we'll have some fun together.
Well, that's cool. Now, I want to break from you for a minute and let Sarah come in. We're going to come back because actually you had two of these time periods in your life where you made changes.
Yes.
Back then and then more recently, right?
Right.
Okay. So, Sarah, you're kind of an expert on people making changes or not making changes, depending upon how you do that.
I am.
So comment on this. I mean, you know, Bob found this passion of doing stuff on his own. I mean, what do people need to do to make changes successfully?
Well, what I observed when I was in the corporate world was that there were a lot of people running around in jobs that they hated, and they didn't know what they wanted. And so I launched on this quest to try and help those individuals out. And I found that there are three things that you really need to know to land in a job that you like. One is what you care about, your interests, the kinds of activities that you enjoy doing. The second is your strengths, and it's best if you can focus on your innate behavioral strengths, but it's also important to consider skills that you've learned over the way. And the third is the one that Bob just pointed out, is what do you need in your environment in order to be wildly successful and to stay out of stress? So he learned that he needed to work for himself. He did not need to have someone over him. And this is the component that is often missed, mm-hmm. is their needs.
Right, right.
So how do you determine that?
Well, there's lots of exercises that you can go through to do that. Most people understand what their interests are. They can write down 100 things that they enjoy doing and 20 things that they hate to do, and you can get pretty close on what your interests are. Strengths, we usually are not real good at figuring out. It usually helps if we can get somebody to feed back from us. So mm-hmm. we just have to ask the question, when I was at my best, what was I doing? And just listen and take notes. The needs is the harder part to get at. So Bob said he learned it. He learned it through a lot of years of hard knocks. That is the hardest part. And you can do it on your own by analyzing those times that you were really in stress. But the fastest way is to take a really good assessment and really zero in on that real quick.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, Bob, you made this transition. You're now working for yourself. You're the big boss.
Right.
But you don't have a corner office anymore, probably, do you?
Not at that point.
Okay.
It was 10 by 12.
So you make the sacrifice for freedom and for what's important to you. And then you spent, what, 30 years kind of doing this kind of thing for yourself?
Yeah, just about.
Okay.
If you add those up, you get a big number.
I don't think he's quite there yet. I think he had 30 years before the change.
Well, and share some of the benefits. Okay, so obviously when you did this, there had to be some stress of making this leap.
Yeah, there was, but it was easy stress. I had proven to myself and to those around me that I could do what I am doing. So it wasn't a question of whether or not, it was just how and how well. So I started, I'm a financial advisor, so I started my practice with some existing clients and the college money program. And it always has been a lot more consultative than salesy, mm-hmm. and a lot more driven by problem solving. And that's unusual, still is. Especially to our degree. So that it was easy to create relationships. And by the one relationship, they would send me some of their friends and other people that needed my help. So it went smoothly. I got off to a nice start and then just kept going and building momentum. And we're still building momentum.
According to KC, you must have had a plan. And a game plan and a playbook,
yeah.
right?
And life begins at the end of your comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
That's from Neil Donald Walsh.
Okay. So we'll get back to the comfort zone in a minute. But so you went through life, and obviously you were very successful. Okay. You got a couple kids through college. You know, you're where you are now. And you're now in another phase of your life, and that is you got to consider where to go next. Okay. So give me some thoughts about some of the things that you were thinking about and how they're coming into play.
Okay. In 2010, I had some health issues, and I thought I was done working. We got those fixed, and at 2:12 on a Wednesday afternoon, I was watching daytime television. And I looked around, and I said, that's enough. So I think I retired for about 3.5 minutes.
That was a watershed
okay.
moment.
Okay. Yeah.
And I am a planner. I am a very strategic planner. I've got a big whiteboard in my office, and we make plans up there. So I had a short-range plan, a long-range plan, a bigger office plan. And I just followed what I had written down and followed my heart as much as anything else, doing more of what I wanted to do.
So you actually had all these clients, and I suspect they really weren't clients. They're friends at this point, most
yes.
of them. Long-term relationships over a long time. And so these are people you got to take care of. So what are you doing to do this now?
Well, now we have staff. So part of the question is, what are they doing? Because but we're maintaining the relationship. We're constantly in touch in one way or another. We have client appreciation events, mm-hmm. And we just keep enjoying each other.
Mm-hmm.
And the problems that it's all financial, so if we solve one, there's more coming behind.
Sure.
So we see them on a regular basis for various things. At a high level, we look at ourselves as financial wellness coaches
mm-hmm.
more than investing money or that kind of thing.
Right.
We want to get all the ducks in a row in their entire
right.
financial house.
Right.
And that's a full-time job because something's always broken.
Always.
Okay, so what this has done is allowed you to focus on things you really like to do.
Yes.
And things you do better.
Yep, yep.
And you got the right marketplace for it. That's called PEP, by the way. Passion, excellence, and perceived value. You got it all together.
Yes, and it is a passion. It's what I want to do, and that's why I see no reason to retire. This is not hard work. And with staff, it's less hard work. But it's just we're having way too much fun for me not to go in that office.
Right.
In theory, I'm supposed to be working from home on Wednesdays. Well, that started in the first of the month, and I think I've been one Wednesday at home.
That's because you're tempted to watch television at 2:12 in the afternoon, right? Okay, so Sarah, Bob integrated staff into his situation. I remember you talking not too long ago about this whole thing about doing what you like to do, delegating what you don't like to do, doing what you're good at, delegating what you're not good at.
Seems to me Bob's done that.
It sounds like it.
Yeah, but how do you do that? I mean, I think Bob's got a lot of experience here. How do other people do it? Because the thought sometime of being in total control and all of a sudden you got staff that you have to account to, and you may think you're the boss, but I think staff thinks that they're the boss most of the time. So how do you handle all of that in your life?
Well, the first thing you do is make a decision that you're going to be happy and that you're going to be excellent at what you're doing. And once you decide that, you're willing to give up those things that you're not good at or that are not your passion and allow people who that is their passion take it on.
Right.
And they may not do it exactly the way you do it, but if everybody's happy, you're going to get a whole lot more accomplished and everybody's going to be a lot happier.
Right. So it's like be goal-oriented and not worry about the process so much, as long as the process is going to stay within the parameters of what needs to be done.
Generally speaking, if you've got a well-balanced team and you're taking advantage of everybody's strengths, you're going to have a situation where everybody's like Bob. They just love to go to work.
Yeah.
And that just you just feel that when you walk into that kind of work situation. Customers feel that. Clients
yeah.
feel
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
That's the ideal.
And I think for entrepreneurs, though, sometimes it's hard to give up the control because when they start out, they're doing everything, whether they're good at it or not. And they manage to be good enough that they get to a certain point and then they do have to bring in staff. So they have to have the confidence that the staff will do what they need them to do. So are there any tips on how to have that confidence so that they will delegate and give up the responsibilities that they're not so good at?
Well, the best thing to do is to understand the delegator and the delegatee. What is everybody's interests, strengths, and needs? And then you can appropriately assign tasks
yeah.
that way.
You know, I'd love to get you guys back, and we'll talk about delegation sometime, because I think it's really the key to being free. And most people don't know how to do it and are afraid to do it, and yet it's how else do you get to do what you want to do and get rid of all of the junk that gets in your way of being who you are?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Take a couple minutes, Sarah, and talk about the book of you and talk about your business a little bit.
The book of you was envisioned to reach mid-career professionals, primarily women, who were in the wrong job and miserable but didn't really know what they wanted. And it's like a coach in a book. It's based upon the results of a personality assessment where we assess just the things we've been talking about, interests, strengths, and motivational needs. And then with the benefit of the data coming back from that assessment, I can write a book just for an individual with information all about him or her and a process that they can go through like a coach in a book so that they can find a job that they are really going to be happy and thrive in, or so that they can improve a job that they're already in. Because it's not always necessary to leave a job to find your passion. And it can also be used to improve a significant relationship. So each book is designed to be a coach in a book to get you started on finding your vocation so that you can sit here 10 years from now like Bob and say, I love what I'm doing so much that I just cannot think, I can't even comprehend the idea of giving it up.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
Okay, I think we need Diane back.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break again, and we'll be back in a few seconds.
You are listening to Changing the Rules. Stay tuned to learn about the luckiest guy in the world's online courses. These courses will guide you through an exciting process so you too can become one of the luckiest people in the world.
Okay, everybody, we're going to come back and let you guys get in a couple more comments. But I want to talk a little bit about something that actually Casey had an awful lot of time in developing. And it's a way, basically, and it's a very, very simple way of getting a grasp on your life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Sarah will agree with this because it starts out by asking two questions, right?
Right.
The first question is?
What's working and what's not working?
Okay. And, you know, it's pretty easy to sit down once a quarter if you get some quiet time and say, you know, what am I happy about? What's working in my life? And you can apply that to everything in general. Or if you want, you can get very specific about something. It, you know, could be my teenage kids aren't working right, right? and the second part of that question is?
If we were to be having this discussion 3 years from today or any time frame, what has to have changed to make me happy with my progress?
And I think Bob certainly has done that. Sarah probably does that every day with people. but you have to have some goals. You have to have a sense of what's going to work and what's not going to work. And one of the things that we've done is we put some worksheets together for our listeners. And it's very simple. It's there's actually another list that goes along with it, right? And that is, you know, kind of the to-do list after you sit down and say what's working, what's not working.
Right.
You know,
right.
What do I want to do in the next 3 months so that I can meet my objective?
Right. It starts out with the philosophical part, and then we get into the brass tacks. And the whole point of this, what we're talking about, is that we limit it to a 90-day period, because sometimes when people are asked to do what's your 10-year plan, what's your 5-year plan, that is so overwhelming. They don't even, like I know for myself, the first time I ever heard that question, I was like, I don't even know where I'm going to be living in 10 years. How can I make a plan? I don't know what I'm going to like in 10 years. So it was daunting and to the point where I just didn't do anything. So we feel that if you do it in a 90-day chunk, that you can get a lot done. And even if you have a to-do list and you don't get it all done in 90 days, that's okay, because you've got 90 days again. And it may turn out that what you thought you needed to do in the first 90 days, when you sit back and ask yourself that question again, what's working and what's not working, you may realize that you were a little bit off course and that you need to redirect yourself. So for the next 90 days, you make a new list. And by doing it in 90-day segments, it's achievable. It's not overwhelming, and you can keep fine-tuning and tweaking as you go along so that you have that success that we need to make ourselves continue.
Okay. And we have that available on our website. You can get a link to a short course, half an hour, gives you the instructions for this, download the worksheets, and play with it.
Yeah.
You know, I think you got to start somewhere. You need a game plan somewhere. And the easiest sometime, if you don't have the time or the inclination to be a strategic planner like Bob with his whiteboard, okay, you know, start with a quick sheet and do that.
And
you do that by our website.
Yes. Go to our website. It's www.theluckiestguyintheworld.com. And you click on the link for courses. And the very first course, I think it says take 20 minutes for yourself and change your life. And it's a free course. And it will give you your 90-day planning tools.
Okay. Now, we're almost out of time, but Bob, you get your last remark, okay? Anything you've thought of while sitting here that you think is important to people who are going through these changes in life?
Probably the biggest one is to figure out what you do best, to find your strength. Mm-hmm. In our office, we start by finding our strengths, mm-hmm. and we don't want anybody doing the thing that they don't want to do.
Good.
So we do that. We talk a lot about self-development. We have a reading list that I pass out at the strategic planning meeting the first of the year, and then I check to see that it's being read and what they're learning.
Now, are these like technical reading, or can it be fictional or
Seven Habits of Highly Exceptional People, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. There are a lot of them, mm-hmm. and that helps.
It does.
I look at myself as a facilitator for their self-development,
mm-hmm.
And they respond to it.
Right.
They both are growing very, very fast.
This is kind of a legacy that you're building.
It is. It is.
Yeah, and you probably like teaching as much as anything else.
I do. We do a lot of mentoring.
Okay. Excellent.
With staff as well as outside people.
Okay. And Sarah, how do I get the Book of You if I want it?
Bookofyou.com.
Well, that's easy.
Okay.
Great.
And this is primarily developed for people who are in the middle of change or trying to find out what they like in terms of a job. But is it effective at all in thinking about retirement?
Absolutely. Because we need to think about what we're going to do with our time.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a really good way to think about how we can use our passions and our strengths to, as Bob says, do some good in the world.
Okay.
Fantastic.
Well, thanks for the two of you being here. And by the way, listen to our show periodically. And if you get some more ideas, get on the phone. It's easy to have you guys back. And we'd like to get some chatter going back and forth about what people need and how to get it. And okay. Casey, what's next for us here?
Well, I have one more quote just because I like the guy's name. This is from Buckminster Fuller. And I like his name, but I also like what he said. You never change things by fighting the existing reality. To change something, build a new model that makes the existing model obsolete. Change the rules.
Okay. One more?
One more quickie. I teach people to work on their head. And my saying is, when your feet hit the floor in the morning, stop for a minute and tell yourself that this is the first day of the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to do with it? And that really works.
Right.
Okay.
On a daily basis.
And next week or 2 weeks?
In 2 weeks, we're going to have another podcast. We hope everybody will join us and invite their friends to join us too.
And I'm going to let the story out. We're talking about hyenas.
Oh.
Okay. Stay tuned for
now
hyenas.
There's a teaser. So thank you, everybody, and change some rules.
Thank you for listening to Changing the Rules, a podcast designed to help you live your life the way you want and give you what you need to make it happen. Join us in 2 weeks for our next exciting topic on Changing the Rules with Casey Dempster and Ray Lowe, the luckiest guy in the world.